BBC London 94.9.
London's news. London's stories.
This is Ian Lee, BBC London 94.9. It's my last show, my last day of filling in for Robert Elms. He's back next week. A collective cheer goes up across London. You've been dead polite in indulging me this week, and I'm very, very grateful. Thank you very much. A good packed show, I would suggest, today. We'll be speaking to James Tormé, the son of legend Mel Tormé. Well, his dad's got had one of the sweetest voices in the world. How does James compare? Nigel Barden is coming in. He's our food expert. The only note I've been sent about what Nigel we're talking about is this. It's rather cryptic. Hot can, brackets, rice pud. I'm assuming, indeed I'm hoping, it's a rice pudding that heats itself. That's the dream. That's the dream, isn't it? Has science really gone this far? Forget the hover car. Forget the jetpacks. I want a can of rice pudding that heats itself. Duncan Fallowell will be in as well. He's an author, travel writer and critic. We've got Funky Friday. The songs have been chosen for me. I'm not very funky. I'm not a funky guy. I try, but really, and I will try. But also, this is what I'm excited about. After One, the Forfar. Oh, it's one of the most underrated groups, and indeed, they are a group of all time. Ladies and gentlemen, four songs by the Monkees? Oh, yes. I feel like the king of BBC London 94.9. I suggest you get your calls in early. If you want to pick your Monkees song, do give us a call, 020-722-4200. You don't have to pick the obvious ones as well. I mean, those guys invented country rock. Give us a call, pick your Monkees song. Tell us why it's so important to you. Maybe it reminds you of going to school or watching the Monkees in the summer holidays, or it reminds you of your mum or whatever. Not suggesting your mum was in the Monkees, but... Forfar by the Monkees today after One. Give us a call now. Get your calls in early for that, please. 020-722-4200. In the meantime, shall we have a little bit of music? It's kind of like laid back today, isn't it? So let's just ease ourselves in. See, the thing about the Monkees, everyone goes, oh, I'll do a bit rubbish. Oh, a little bit rubbish. They got that hit, I'm a Believer and Daydream Believer. And that's it. Well, first of all, let's stop you there. I'm a Believer and Daydream Believer, two of the classic pop songs in the world. Two of the best pop songs ever, period. Secondly, there are so much more than that available. They invented, as I said, country rock. They had psychedelic rock. Did you ever see their movie Head? The movie Head is written by Jack Nicholson. Oh, it's a mess, but it's a wonderful mess. It's one of those few psychedelic films that stands the test of time. Oh, it looks less dated than The Easy Rider, which is just awful. That horrible scene in Easy Rider where they're tripping in a... Is it a graveyard? Peter Fonda and Dennis Hopper and a couple of ladies, one of them, I believe, at some point loses her clothes, and they are having a hallucinogenic experience in a graveyard. It's a nice idea, Easy Rider. It does not stand the test of time, unfortunately, unlike Head, which does. So, your forfar today is the Monkees. Are the Monkees? Are's the Monkees. Either way, that's who we've got coming up. So, give us a call now, 0207-224-2000. Pick your Monkees songs. It can be one of the obvious ones. It doesn't need to be one of the obvious ones. It can be slightly more obscure. We've got two places left. Two places left. And not only do you get to hear the song on the radio and tell us why it's so important to you, I think we're allowed to do this at the BBC, you can own the song. We're going to give you all of the copyright to the song. Not literally, but you can have bragging rights to your friend, saying, yeah, I own, you know, Pleasant Valley Sunday, I own that. You can have that. 020-722-4200. Why are they so special? Davy Jones who of course died last year, was it? Is one of the few celebrities I cried at when he died. I don't really... I remember mocking. Mocking, is that too harsh a word? It's harsh, but it's what happened. Whitney Houston fans. I couldn't understand why there were Whitney Houston fans in the street flailing themselves and sobbing. And then, one night, last year, I was putting my little boy to bed, and the song I sing to put him to bed is Daydream Believer. A song he falls asleep to. I'm singing Daydream Believer. I get a text from my mate Dougie saying, oh, sad about Davy Jones, isn't it? Now, whenever you get a text saying it's sad about, your hope, it's either a sex scandal or it's a death. I was kind of hoping for a sex scandal. And then seconds later, a friend wrote, another friend texted me saying, oh, really sorry about Davy Jones. Oh, my goodness. I burst into floods of tears. What celebrities? Here's something we can throw out here just on a whim. What celebrities have you cried at when they died? Saying that only David Jones, there's a few. Arthur Lee from Love. Oh, I wept when he went. I danced with Arthur Lee. I know he was a favourite on BBC London, 94.9 over the years. I danced with him once, and I heckled him during a concert so much. He went, I'm going to play Singing Cowboy just to shut this guy up. Thank you, Arthur. I cried when Arthur Lee died. I cried when Davy Jones died. I may have shed a tear when George Harrison passed away. It's definitely possible. What celebrities' deaths have caused you to cry? There's a cheery subject for a Friday, isn't it, eh? Happy Friday. Happy start to the weekend, guys. You can give us a call, 0207-224-2000. You can email me, ian.lee@bbc.co.uk. Or you can send me a text, 81333. Start your text with London. Or perhaps you think crying when a celebrity passes is a little bit sad. I always thought it was a little bit sad. When Davy Jones died, I think I was crying, partly because, I love the Monkees. He was my least favourite monkey, it has to be said, out of the four of them. He was number four. But also, I think I was kind of mourning my childhood. I was mourning, they used to show the Monkees in the school holidays, didn't they? Every weekday morning, about 9 o'clock. It was my childhood. I was approaching 40. I think there were lots of things kind of tied up in it. What celebrities have made you cry when they've died? 0207224 2000. 81333. Start your text London. Or you can send me an email as well if you want. ian.lee@bbc.co.uk. I managed, for those listening yesterday, I managed to get my wife some birthday presents yesterday. I kind of cheated. Well, no, I didn't cheat. I bought something nice. I went to Liberty's and bought some nice smell things. Girls like smells. Do they? No? Oh, anyway, this isn't from me. These are from my boys. So I got some smell things. But I came out smelling... Well, I came out smelling like a prostitute. I was trying so many different scents. And I forgot that you're supposed to put it on a little flappy stick, aren't you, and wave it. So I'm just getting different parts of my body and spraying all of these smells on. I came out and my eyes were watering with the scent. I got... The things they sell you these days are very odd. For my wife's present from my boys, got a lovely scent, but also got this... she likes bathing. I don't know why. She likes sitting in a bath. She likes sitting in a bath and then having a shower immediately after the bath. Is that weird? I think that's weird. I said, why do you do that? Well, to wash off all the dirt. But that's what the bath is meant to do, is to wash off all the dirt. But I suppose at some point in the bath, you reach the tipping point where you're actually just, instead of sitting in clean water, you're sitting in dirty water. Anyway, she has a bath and she has a shower. But I bought this stuff that you put into the bath, and it's called bath honey. And it comes in a jar, and you get one of those honey drizzler sticks with it. And it's, maybe I just bought honey. It smells of honey. And I said to the lady, oh, it smells good enough to eat. She went, I wouldn't recommend that, sir. No, I just said it smells, it's very awkward. And I think that in places like that, in Liberty's and in the perfume and makeup sections of Boots and John Lewis and Debenhams, I think that's how they make their money. They prey on men who feel a little bit uncomfortable. Because I'm in there thinking, I'll nip in, I'll get a bottle of scent, and then I'll nip straight out again. I couldn't. There's too much. And I walk in there to to pretend that I'm not anxious and nervous. What I do is I pretend I'm on my mobile phone. And I'm just nonchalantly walking around. I'm talking on the phone going, yeah, Okay, okay. And I'm desperately looking for something that looks like, you know, something I can grab and walk out with. That's not weird at all. But I did go up to a lady. She could tell I was completely lost and out of my depth. Can I help you? Some nice smells for my wife, please. Yes, sir. She obviously just sold me the most expensive thing that was there, the thing that they were trying to shift that day. Anyway, I bought it. My boys gave it to her this morning. And I believe that she's very, very happy with it. So that's panic over, dear listener. Panic over. 0207 22 42000. We have our four contestants. Is the wrong word, but it seems slightly fitting. Taking part in two for it's the Monkees later on today. One of my favourite bands of all time. I travelled to the United States last year to go and see them in concert. And boy, did I not regret it in the slightest. One of the most joyous experiences of my life. Asking as well today, have you ever cried at the death of a celebrity? Peter has sent me an email. My friend played... Oh, hang on, it was talking about Arthur Lee of Love. Peter says, my friend played with Arthur Lee a few times. Mad as a box of frogs. Oh, wasn't he just? But a musical genius. He told my friend Nick the story of writing the love song Alone Again Or, where he let Brian claim the writing credit... But for Alone Again, but said, I wrote the awe. The only time I cried when a celebrity died was when Joe Strummer of The Clash passed away. Over 10 years ago, I will have a book out in a few weeks on his birthday to celebrate the festival held last year in his memory. Oh, well, there you go. Joe was the man, says Pete in Acton. What celebrities have you got so upset when they died that you cried? Oh, I sobbed like a baby when Jones went. Oh, man alive. 020-722-42000. You can email ian.lee@bbc.co.uk. Busy show today, ladies and gentlemen. Busy show. Funky Friday ends the show. The songs that I have in front of me do indeed look very, very funky. So don't... I may not be a funky boy, but trust me, we've got funky music lined up. James Tourmet is coming in after two. He's the son of Mel Tourmet. The grandson... Yes, the grandson of Thora Heard. It's such a strange showbiz connection that I think it's wonderful. Nigel Barden coming in after 1:30 with his hot cam brackets rice pud. And after 12:30, we'll be talking to Duncan Fallowell, who's a travel writer. And he's written a book called How to Disappear, a memoir for misfits. He was also, in 1969, the Spectator's first rock critic. What a great time to be a rock critic. 1969. I can't think of any better period to be writing reviews of rock and roll music. Surely that's got to be the finest era, hasn't it? 0207 22 42000 is the telephone number. You can give us a call if you want to have a chat about any of those things. If you just want to phone up and have a chat, do you know what I mean? I'm here for the next few hours. I'm not going anywhere. I haven't seen The Graduate for a long, long time. I've seen it. Don't calm down. Of course, I've seen it. I haven't seen The Graduate for a long, long time. Talking about this will shock you. You know, "Stairway to Heaven" by Led Zeppelin. Never heard it. Never heard it in my life. I know, I've heard a little bit. I've heard the bit about she's buying a stairway to heaven, and that's all I've ever heard, and I intend to go the rest of my life never hearing it. That's my mission now. I know, it's odd. I've only ever seen one episode of Friends as well. The same episode twice, by coincidence. Anyway, enough of my ramblings. 0207 224 2000, ian.lee@bbc.co.uk. Which celebrities did you get very upset at? Did you cry when they died? Davy Jones, Arthur Lee and George Harrison for me. We'll take some of your emails and calls. Afternoon, 12:33, Ian Lee. Last day of sitting in for Robert Elms. He's back on Monday. We're asking which celebrities' deaths caused you to burst into tears. It turns out you're a soft bunch, you lot. Oh, you're a soft bunch. Ifan has emailed in, ian.lee@bbc.co.uk. The death of Elizabeth Sladen. Who's she? Doctor Who assistant. That's who. She's Sarah Jane, wasn't she, I think. Made me cry for a very long time. Very sad. Alzira says JJ Cale, who died, was it last week? I think JJ Cale passed away. I shed a few tears last Saturday when I learnt of the death of JJ Cale. I have all of his CDs and have been listening to them all week so as to appreciate the full essence of the man. What an uncompromising musician who did not sell out to the music industry. And Andrew says, I shed a tear when Dusty Springfield died. But the celebrity death that, oddly to me, really meant something, even though I wasn't a big fan of her, was Paula Yates. The realisation my generation were not going to be around forever. And there's a couple. Let me do a couple of these on text. Alistair on Twitter. Alistair says Seve Ballesteros' death brought a tear to my eye. Oh, and Lino, yeah, Frank Sidebottom, yeah. So I cried when Frank died. Oh, dearie, dearie me. Very, very sad. You can email ian.lee@bbc.co.uk. Let me know what the death of which celebrity. Nice cheery subject, isn't it, for a Friday? Huh? Get you smiling? Which celebrity's passing caused you to cry? You can call as well if you want. It's nice to talk about these things as opposed to just read them off the email. 020-722-4200 is the telephone number. 81333. Start your text with London. Afternoon, this is Ian Lee, BBC London 94.9. I've been reliably informed there's going to be a podcast this whole week. Oh, I didn't realise. I'm very excited. I've recorded links and everything. I'm assuming you can go to the BBC website and have a little look under Robert Elms and probably iTunes as well. Have a little look and it'll be up there at maybe some point later on today, which is very exciting. I'm very chuffed with that. Hopefully you'll go and have a listen now. Joined by Duncan Fallowell, who is author, a travel writer and critic. Duncan, this isn't a new book. This is just out in paperback, isn't it? This is How to Disappear, memoir for misfits.
Books, funny enough, get more and more confusing because in the technological age, you've got endless editions, and then you've got Kindles and things like that. It's actually published here 2011, won quite a good prize, the Pen Ackley Prize for memoir.
Yeah,
but it's a sort of mix of things, memoir, autobiography, but more a pursuit of elusive people.
That is the theme that kind of runs through it. I kind of had a little flick through it last night and read some bits and pieces. Your writing is very much in the style of a traveller, in that you'll be talking about something, and then suddenly you'll flit off. The story I paid closest attention to was the Waiting for Maruma on the Scottish Isle of Egg. Is that how it's pronounced?
Egg, yeah.
And suddenly you go off into a lovely flight of fancy about how you don't like Venice.
Well,
apropos very, very little.
Well, you should know, perhaps, that I'm a modernist or postmodernist author.
Yep.
And all the wonderful developments in the arts of the last 100 years is something that fascinates me very much. I don't do a straight text.
I'm
not a genre writer. It's very much my own thing. I like to think of myself as a literary writer. Mm. But I'm also very open, and the text is very open. I don't write, let us say, books for closed minds. Or let's say, if you have a closed mind when you begin, it'd be wonderful if it was a little bit more open when you finish.
I think it does. Once you settle into the style, going, oh, hang on a second, he's going to go all over the place, and embrace that for being as wonderful as it is, it starts to make a lot of sense, and it's fun.
Well, it's fun. I'm glad you said that. I want every page to be a pleasure, quite apart from the underlying themes. But my American publisher said, you know, what's the USP? And I thought he was talking about something you stick in the side of a computer. And he meant unique selling point.
Yes, that's the phrase.
And so I said, oh, well, it's very, very trippy. And fortunately, he'd taken enough acid or remembered people who had to know what that means. The book surges like a series of sort of almost opium visions,
yes.
Really. But I don't know if you've ever taken opium, but if you have, you will know that you get a very clear view of things.
Yes.
It's not this smoky, vague, mysterious thing. These visions are quite clear, but they do come and go in a mysterious way. And my book is also about mystery. So if the reader's a little bit foxed, that's okay. Don't be frightened of being challenged or lost, you know. A world in which you can't get lost is a nightmare.
I think we should say, on the back it says, five brilliantly written and irrepressibly quirky travelogues. I think the word travelogue does it a slight disservice.
Well, what do you mean by travelogue? What do you understand by
travelogue? Well, by travelogue, I kind of, to me, it implies more of, not a travel guide, but more of a, so I went to this place, and these are some of the things I saw here, and then I went to this town, and these are some of the things I saw. This is a real journey. These stories are separate journeys, not only to places, but to track people down, to speak to people, and also a real kind of a recounting of your experiences and your thoughts that are provoked by these places.
Well, I also did a lot of interviews with people who didn't disappear.
Mm.
And for many years, that was my sort of bread and butter in journalism. I've always been freelance. I've tried to join organisations. They never quite wanted me. But nonetheless...
They'd always return the letter and the cheque, would they? No, thank you.
No, they wouldn't return anything, really. they would just say, we don't think you're quite... So I'm a sort of maverick person myself. And I have a collection of people that didn't disappear, called 20th Century Characters. But I built up this body of material of things that eluded me, things that weren't quite realised, reportages that had gone wrong or ended up in a strange place through a series of chances. And the book begins in India in 1975, where I was travelling, and I came across one of the characters, and I pursue her, Bepsy Pabri. And actually, there aren't many supernatural things in the book, but that is one of them. I did a punk glossy magazine with some friends called Deluxe, and I thought, oh yeah, when I was in India, I came across this character, Bepsy Pabri, I'll write about her. I've seen her obituary, and I'll do a kind of... And then I remember tearing the obituary out of what I thought was the Times, and then I couldn't find this obituary anywhere, so I rang the Times and said, could you send me a copy? And they said, okay, and gives the details. They rang me back, well, we can't find this. And I couldn't find this obituary anywhere. And to this day, I don't know what it was I read, but it gave rise to a whole series of attempts to track down this person, Bepsy Pabri, who had actually married an English nobleman and then been dumped. And poor woman tried to get back into the limelight and failed. So the book is also about people who don't want to disappear but do. And anyway, in one of the other stories you mentioned, Egg, I was on the train, opened a copy of the Times I bought at the station, and blow me down, there's this sort of dream obituary of Bepsy Pabri I'd read. I haven't had many supernatural experiences, but that's one of them.
Wow.
And the book itself does shift backwards and forwards in time, so maybe I was shifting backwards and forwards in time without realizing it.
We're back to LSD again, I believe. There could be...
Yeah, I loved LSD, but you've got to stop it.
You can't say that on the BBC, sir. You can't.
Well, what I can tell you is that if you keep taking it, it stops working. The brain sort of gets the hang of it.
Right.
So, yes, folks.
You did... We're talking about that whole kind of psychedelic era. You were the Spectator's first rock critic. 1969, is that right?
My first column was 1970. And funny enough, the Spectator archive has just gone online.
So all of your stuff is there.
So suddenly there were 100 articles of mine from the 70s about, what I did when I left university, I always knew I wanted to be a writer, but how you put that into practice isn't easy. So I just wrote to the editor of the Spectator saying, you don't have anybody under 40 writing for you. And he said, you're absolutely right. What would you like to do? And I said, well, I'd like to be a rock critic. That seems to be really the gap that's missing. And they said, okay, go off to the Isle of Wight Festival. So I went off. So I thought, well, I was not expecting this. That's rather funny. And my bank holiday had been otherwise arranged. So I listened to the Isle of Wight Festival on Radio 1 as it was there.
Fantastic.
And wrote, and then I got the Daily Express, and they said, oh, it was a disaster, lots of crime, health.
Was that the year that it all kind of went wrong? And
No, because by the time my Spectator piece came out, I wrote the opposite of what the Express said.
Okay.
The penny had dropped, it had all been exaggerated, the whole thing was a huge success. But my first column, really, for the Spectator, I'm afraid, was a fraud.
You didn't go.
I wasn't there. I just pretended to be there, sitting in my sister's bed. Well, it was such a shock.
That's fantastic.
When you're 21, you don't expect a big magazine to say, yes, we love you.
You listened to the radio, you read the Express, and you cobbled something together.
Cobbled is not the word. I wrote a very highfalutin piece full of Latin. And I remember describing The Who as baleful Madonnas. And... they didn't know what it meant. I did, but I don't think anybody else did.
How long did you keep that up for, the writing for The Spectator?
I'm still writing for them.
Oh.
But I was never on the staff, but I had a column. The rock column went fortnightly, and then I became their film critic, and then I became their fiction critic. But I hated most of the books they sent me, which was like two or three novels a week of a very... I'm just not a dull, middle-of-the-road book person. I like cutting-edge stuff.
I'm beginning to pick that up from you, sir. Yes, good. Yes.
I've tried to hide it.
It's come across wonderfully. then you say, did you start up this punk magazine?
Well, a friend of mine called Willie Daly, who'd worked with something called Mr. Freedom, Tommy Roberts, which was one of the first kind of post-hippie shops for fashion, said, let's do a magazine. And so we did one with Deluxe, another photographer friend of mine, Byron Newman. And it was the first glossy in London to cost a pound. This would have been, when was it? Late 70s. Mm. And we got it into Smith's. It was the first glossy in Smith's. The first issue had a cover by Peter Blake. The second issue had a cover by Alan Jones, very fetishistic. The third issue didn't happen because the guy backing us didn't realise that to do a glossy magazine, even in the late 70s, sinks a fortune. Mm. So we just... But Caroline Baker worked with us. Mike Roberts, who then became Male Fashion, Vanity Fair, worked with us. Caroline Baker had come out of Nova. And then... So the magazine was pulled. Mm. The Canadian backer went back to Canada and feeling rather bewildered and poor. And we then crossed the road and hooked another millionaire to do another punk glossy called Boulevard.
You make it sound so easy. You phone up the Spectator. I want to be a rock critic. Okay, Isle of Wight next weekend. You latch onto a millionaire to finance your punk magazine. He goes. You latch onto another one.
But we haven't discussed my rejections. My rejections are legion, and perhaps we won't go there.
Oh, really?
Well, I've always been freelance.
Yeah.
Means always having to hustle, always having to stick your neck out, always people saying, sorry, no. Mm. You just have to learn to live with rejection, but you never do. It always hurts.
Yes.
This book, How to Disappear, was rejected by every what you would call mainstream publisher in London and was published by the Ditto Press originally, which it was their first ever literary book. They're a fantastic little outfit in East London. And they did the most wonderful short-run art edition with designed by an Italian whose name is very simple and very beautiful, and I've now totally forgotten what it was. But he's now gone to New York.
A place you hate, New York.
Well, yeah. How do you know that?
Oh, it's in the book. Do you remember? Yes, you mentioned that in there.
You read my Johnny Rotten interview. I interviewed Johnny Rotten in New York, and he was saying how much he loved it and hated L.A., and I said how much I loved L.A. and hated New York. And when I left New York, next thing I know, he's living in L.A., which he's supposed to hate, and he's still living there.
He's a traitor in so many ways, isn't he, Johnny Rotten?
Except to himself. He's not a traitor to himself.
But you do...
Which is the bit that counts if you're an artist.
Exactly.
And he is an artist.
You do love travel, but you are very specific. There are certain places that you do not like. And a friend of yours invites you in the book to go to Venice. You're like, no, don't fancy it.
Well, I don't like crowds, you see. The idea of being dragged around with 40 million other people...
Venice, I've never been, but it does just sound like it's a theme park, doesn't it, really?
Well, it's a theme park. It's a very expensive theme park. Hmm. A friend of mine called Anne Summers Cox, who was in charge of a thing called Venice in Peril or Save Venice. Anyway, she's moved on now. Somebody else take it. She's trying to stop those great cruise liners going in. You know, you get a lovely Venice all on a human scale. Then a cruise liner, which is like a moving skyscraper, moors up alongside it. And suddenly, Venice is a dinky toy. Mm. And all the action is in this incredible thing. You know, so mind you, things being out of proportion and jammed up against each other is the way of the postmodern world. Go from Borough Market to the Shard, and you'll know what I'm talking about.
Where are your? We talked about the places you don't like. Where are your favourite places in the world to go?
Well, this varies, and my very favourite place for many years was a place called Huntington on the border of England and Wales. This was my healing place. Mm. London's wonderful, but my God, you've got to disappear from it periodically, otherwise you go bananas. And I used to go up to the Welsh border, and it was this little bubble of England that went into Wales, and there was something anomalous about it, and a secret valley there of the Upper Arrow River, and I rented a cottage there for many years. Fortunately, the farmer I rented it from committed suicide, and his wife moved in, and the son moved into the big farm. And now something else has happened to prevent me going there. The whole of the valley is being covered in polytunnels. People think wind farms are dreadful. Well, I suppose they are, but polytunnels just...
What are polytunnels?
They're these plastic tunnels where you grow things that otherwise normally couldn't grow there.
Right, okay.
Now, what I'm talking about is the most beautiful hill farming yeah. area in Britain being covered in polytunnels.
So it looks like a blue tarpaulin being drawn across it.
It looks like a white, has huge white pieces simply being cut out of the landscape. Mm. And it's dreadful, and Herefordshire Council need to sort their act out on what they're going to do with the county. If they're going to cover it in polytunnels, don't be surprised if their tourist industry goes down the pan.
You live in London. How does London compare to other places you've been to in the world?
Well, I was born in London, and I remember interviewing James Baldwin, you know, the American writer, who lived in the south of France, and I said, you go back to New York very often. He said, it's much easier to live in a place where your blood is not in the soil. But I keep getting pulled back to my native city. It's hopeless, really. He, I suppose, was an expatriate. I was thinking the other day, if you're poor, you're called an immigrant. If you're rich, you're called an expatriate.
It's very true.
Because you have a nice villa in the south of France and say, well, really, I'm from Vienna, but I can't stand it.
Where are you off to next? Have you got anywhere planned? Or I get the feeling you're quite spontaneous and you go at the drop of a hat. Is that right?
Well, I'm quite spontaneous, except that the book you've got there took 30 years to build up. It built up like a coral reef. And it was refined and again and again. So I have, when I actually go, maybe spontaneous, but my dreams linger long beforehand. I want to go to Brazil, actually, except I'm terrified of being attacked. One of the things about all these trips is I'm a very gregarious person, but they only really work if you go alone.
Mm.
And because the couple, as you know, is a sort of prophylactic, it's self-sufficient. Mm. You don't really... when I went to Russia and did my St. Petersburg book, I lived with Russians, and that was fantastic. But it was also quite taxing because I was doing it alone. I'd love to go to Brazil, but I can't go to Brazil alone. I've been told by Brazilians, oh, don't go alone.
Mm.
So what do I do? If you've got any ideas out Listen, there, let me know.
If you're paying, I'll come with you, but we don't have to talk.
Oh, that's all right,
I'll be 50 yards behind you and just make sure you're okay.
But I'll be there with a little notebook and my deep frown.
Duncan Fallow, it's very nice to meet you. The book is called How to Disappear, a memoir for misfits. And it is, you know, it is very literary in the way it's written. It's a cracking read. I shall be finishing
and
this.
And it's very trippy.
I couldn't possibly comment, but yes, I believe from what I've been told by friends, it's very, very trippy. Duncan, very nice to meet you. Thank you very much for coming in.
Bless you.
Can I come back next week? Seriously, tell Robert to take another week off. I'm enjoying this. Wasn't he lovely? Wasn't he a nice gentleman, Duncan Fallow, and his book...
BBC London 94.9.
London's news. London's stories.
Good afternoon, this is Ian Lee, BBC London 94.9. It's 7 minutes past one exactly. Lots of emails and tweets on how soft and wonderful you all are. When I threw out celebrities that you'd cried at when they died, I thought we won't get many. We'll get a lot of people saying I'm stupid and we won't get many responses. I've had loads. It's been the busiest thing I've done all week. I'll do those in a little bit. There's some cracking ones, there's some obvious ones, there's some not quite so obvious ones. Isn't it nice we can all share the names and the lists of stars who've died that we cried for, and there's no embarrassment about it. No embarrassment at all. Good for you, London. I'll go through that list in a little bit. Coming up now, though, this is something I'm very excited about, and I can't believe I managed to swing this at BBC London. I am indeed the king of the airways today. It's the fantastic Forfa, where you choose four tracks by one group or one artist, You get a track each, you tell me why you chose it, what it means to you, why it's so important to you. We play it very, very simple. Today, my favourite group of all time. They are a group, they are a television show, they are an entertainment phenomenon. They're also a bit of a joke, and unfairly, I think, very unfairly. Ladies and gentlemen, I give you The Monkees. And we've got some of the obvious ones and some not so obvious ones, which is always exciting to hear. Our first caller on this is Alan in Catford. Good afternoon, Alan.
Ah, good afternoon.
Alan, nice to talk to you. Now, listen, when The Monkees were suggested, a lot of people turn their nose up at The Monkees and think they're a joke. What do The Monkees mean to you?
Well, I've grown up with The Monkees ever since, I was 4 or 5. My sister loved them. And I've just absolutely grown to... I think they're brilliant. Absolutely amazing little band. And I think they're so talented. Michael Nesmith, Peter Tork, Mickey Dolenz. Were amazing.
Yeah, they were. And the thing is...
Are amazing.
Those three definitely are amazing. They're touring at the moment in the States, those three.
Well, I know. It's a funny. Davy Jones died.
Yeah.
And Mike Nesmith rejoins The Monkees. Don't you think that's a bit strange?
There are lots of conspiracy theories about this. Nesmith didn't tour very often with the other three Monkees in the 80s and the 90s. He did the odd show and a little tour of the UK.
You saw them, didn't you?
I've seen them.
Mackenzie Crook.
I've
so
seen
was
them.
I,
oh, were
Wesley.
You? Were you there that same night? I was there with Mackenzie.
Yep.
Oh, look.
You were famous. I mean, you were. I recognised you.
I was on the telly back then. I was more recognisable.
Shall we say?
Bless you, Alan. Bless you.
Yes.
There are stories that Nesmith didn't get on with Jones, and that I don't know how true those are or not. But yes, it's good to see the fact that they're out there now. Now, listen. Which song, Alan, have you chosen? You've not gone for one of the obvious ones, have you?
No, because I'm a bit of a Monkees sort of. What shall we say? I know all their albums, shall we say.
Good for you.
Really. And, and I had to go for this song because it's Michael Nesmith's finest piece of work, I think.
Which you've gone for Listen to the Band.
Yes.
Which was a single that flopped hideously.
I know.
Even though it is one of the greatest country rock pop songs of all time.
Oh, it's amazing. And it's psychedelic as well.
Yeah.
You know, you've got the organ bit in the middle, like when it all fades away, and then he comes in with that Listen to the Band thing. And it's this incredible song. It's a classic blues, psychedelic country, all mixed up in one.
Alan, I couldn't have described it or categorised it any better than that. So this is Alan in Catford. He now owns this song. Ladies and gentlemen, I give you one of the finest songs you've probably never heard in your life. It's The Monkees. Listen to the Band. Listen to the Band by The Monkees from the Monkees Present album. It was the B-side of Someday Man. Then everyone realised, hang on a minute, this song's really good. We should make this the A-side. It went to about number... Well, it didn't chart at all, I don't think. Maybe it got into the top 80s. This is Ian Lee sitting in for Robert Elms on BBC London 94.9. The four for today is The Monkees. No, don't laugh. Don't laugh, because they are good. They are fantastic. Not only was it a superb television show, and let's be honest, of course, they were put together for the TV show, but it's one of the most amazing stories in rock in that they evolved from a couple of actors and a couple of musicians into a tight rock and roll group. Nick's in Weybridge. Hello, Nick.
Hello, Ian.
Nick, the Monkees, do you turn your nose up at them and sneer?
No. I'm a 61 baby, and I was very lucky. My cousin was a 51 baby, and we lived in the same house.
Yeah.
And she sort of bought all these albums, and the two albums I grew up on were The Police Leave Me and The Monkees. So I love every track off the Monkees album.
There you go, you see. It is... hang on a minute, how old would you... You'd have been about, like, 6 years old or something.
Yeah, I was... between 6 and 10, I listened to them all the time.
Did you used to watch the TV show as well, Nick?
Yes, I did.
And did you enjoy it? Because it's one of those few kind of 60s programmes, I think, stands the test of time quite well.
Well, because you're a bit younger, Ian...
Bless
there
you.
Wasn't much else on.
Was there not?
It was quite dull in the 60s. I think there were three channels up to 69. And that was one of the few things you got that was in colour.
It's very rare you hear that sentence. It was quite dull in the 60s. I imagine if you were 6, 7, 8, 9 years old, it probably was quite dull, because all of the psychedelic experience and the music experience, if you weren't living in a major town and weren't sort of 15 years or above, you'd miss out on all of that, wouldn't you?
Well, I grew up in Fulham, in Chelsea, and you know where it was all happening. But I can only remember the 60s in black and white for some reason.
The 60s. Yes, we're told how colourful and how exciting and vibrant it was. But yeah, most of the footage is all black and white and rather dull and rather grainy. Even as a child, though, Nick, were you aware of an excitement happening in the 60s, or is it only looking back that you realise you grew up in something rather special?
No, I wasn't. But my parents were strict Russian people.
Oh.
So we weren't sort of had access to the, you know, I went to school in Fulham Palace Road. We used to go up the King's Road in Chelsea. You used to see things that I think you're too young to know what you're looking
at.
Yeah,
of course. So, Nick, which Monkey song have you chosen and why?
Well, I like all of them on the first album. Yeah. Love them. But one that I learned what the lyrics were about when I was about 18 completely changed the song for me. And if you listen to the lyrics, and bear in mind, this is one of the few protest songs about Vietnam War that got through the net of the American government. And it's called The Last Train to Clarksville. And Clarksville Station was the train station where the troops who were going out to Vietnam left from. And if you listen to the words, it makes it more even poignant.
You're right, it is about, soldiers going off to war, but it wrapped up in bubblegum. Nick, this is for you. This is the Monkees, Last Train to Clarksville. It's an anti-war song wrapped up in sweet-tasting bubblegum. This is Ian Lee, BBC London 94.9. The forfer today is the Monkees. Are the Monkees, is, was, will be. John's in Maidstone. Good afternoon, John.
Good afternoon, Ian. Hi.
I'm enjoying myself more than perhaps. I think I should pay the BBC some of my extensive fee back to them.
You've had a good week, haven't you?
I've loved it. I'm loving this half hour more than anything. John, which Monkey song have you chosen and why?
Well, the song I've gone for, I mean, I've like the previous caller, I grew up with the Monkees. The only album I ever had was original Meet the Monkees from the 60s that my sister gave me.
Yeah.
I grew up with that, and I had a best of and everything else. Then one night, when I was a teenager, I stayed up late to watch Head. It was shown on BBC, I don't know, probably about 11 o'clock.
Head, the 1968 Monkees movie written by Jack Nicholson, yes.
That's right. I had no idea what it was going to be about. But pretty soon in, about 5 minutes in, I mean, I was absolutely knocked out by it.
Yep.
And the song I've chosen is Circle Sky, which they do a fantastic live performance of.
Now, I'm not sure which version we got here, whether it's the live or the studio. If it's the live one, I suspect it possibly isn't. But if it is the live one, it's the studio one. The live version in the film is them playing it. And they are a fantastic band, aren't they?
Oh, it's superb. All dressed in white suits, if I remember correctly.
Yep.
And the song itself, I just thought, good grief, there's so much more to this band than, you know, Last Train to Clarksville and Monkees theme, etc., etc. I thought, what a cracking song. And there's so many on Head that are great, As We Go Along and Porpoise Song as well. But this one, Circle Sky, for me, superb.
Well, As We Go Along and the Porpoise Song, both written by Carole King, both wonderful, wonderful songs. Circle Sky is another Nesmith composition, which has kind of got vaguely anti-war overtones. The Circle Sky, I think, is the helicopter blades in Vietnam. But it's a corker. And I bet after having watched Head, John, you've still got no idea what it's about, have you?
I must admit, at times it does border on unwatchable. The soundtrack is highly listable, so I guess that outweighs it, doesn't it?
John, thank you very much. Here's Circle Sky. That is the Monkees. And that is live. That is, for those people who say, oh no, they couldn't play their own instruments, that's them playing live in concert. Man, they're a good little band, aren't they? I'm thoroughly enjoying this. Thank you so much for indulging me this afternoon, dear listener. It means a lot. The last forfer of the Monkees is chosen by Mark in Romford. Afternoon, Mark.
Hi, Ian. How you doing?
I've got the biggest grin on my face. I'm like the proverbial child in the candy shop. I'm a huge Monkees fan, and this is great fun. What have you chosen, Mark, and why?
Well, Ian, I've chosen Pleasant Valley Sunday by the Monkees.
Yep.
What I really like it is, it sounds like a really fantastic sort of bubblegum pop record, a bit like you were saying about one of the their songs earlier, Last Train to Clarksville as well.
Yeah.
But actually, when you really listen to the lyrics, it's actually very, very subversive. And you know, quite dark, actually.
Well, it's basically saying, hey, you know your life, it's pretty rubbish and boring.
Oh, thanks, Ian.
No, not you personally, Mark. Sorry, no. I'm saying this is the message it's addressing to the kids of America. Another song written by Carole King and her husband, Jerry Goffin. And I think this was after Jerry Goffin kind of started taking drugs and was very close to having a nervous breakdown. He was very jaded with everything. This is what he came up with. And again, this is the Monkees playing on this. It's Nesmith doing the guitar riff, which I only just worked out recently how to play this guitar riff. It's a joy to play.
Is it? Absolutely. Well, it's, and Mickey Dolan singing as well, isn't it?
He's got,
rather than Davy Jones or whatever.
He's got one of the great rock voices. Mark, listen, we have to end it because I do want to squeeze this in. Thank you so much. This is wonderful. Nesmith playing the opening riff on this Carole King song, Pleasant Valley Sunday. Well, I feel thoroughly indulged. I'm more than happy to pay my week's fee back for that last 30 minutes. That makes it all worthwhile. Thank you so much. That was the Monkees there, and I hope that maybe has sparked up your interest a little bit to go and treat yourself to a greatest hits, or indeed the head soundtrack. This is Ian Lee, BBC London 94.9. Coming up in the next 30 minutes, I've got people bringing in glasses and all kinds of bits. Oh, look at this, all kinds of bits and pieces, bottles and things. I'm looking forward to this. Is this where I get lunch? Is this how it works? Nigel Barden's coming in to give us some culinary delights. Afternoon, this is Ian Lee, BBC London 94.9. I'm getting worried. Nigel Barden's here and he's setting up props. I'm worried I'm about to... It looks like you're about to do a magic trick or something. Now, you are here for food and drink, aren't you?
Could be rabbits, could be things. Yeah,
I'm a little bit anxious. Listen, let's have a bit of Cat Stevens, then we'll find out exactly what's going on, shall we?
Yes.
Not Cat Stevens, the other Moonlit Shadow thing. Afternoon, Ian Lee, BBC London 94.9. I'm a little bit apprehensive now. Normally when I sit in the radio studio... and that's made it even worse, Nigel, for goodness sake. So that cackle. Normally I sit in the radio studio, I sit here either on my own or I'm here and there is a guest opposite me. That's fine, that's the standard, that's the way I've done it for the last 10 years. But very rarely, if ever, do I have a guest wander in around me, put equipment and accoutrements and glasses of water beside me. I'm concerned, Nigel Barden. What is all this about?
Well, firstly, and the other one, and we should probably bring it a bit nearer you, the weighty can.
This is the big can,
yeah,
yes.
Yeah, because once we've started, we need to just leave it stationary.
Okay.
What we're going to do, it's hot can, and I've tried their Christmas pud in a can before.
Oh.
But this is, the irony is, with quite warm, muggy weather as it is, you'd think that rice pudding you would have would be... cold, but actually, I wanted to show you how this works. So, say you were on a boat or mountaineering or anything. Anyway, let's do it first.
It's a can of rice pudding, but yeah. it's a bigger can. It's got a kind of outer can on it.
Yeah,
there are three holes at the top. I have a little looks like a
long prodder, metal prodder. You probably all the way down to the bottom. The three of those, and then
that's one.
Yeah. So then you do, that's it, and then you pull the ring can. Pull.
Hang on, onto it.
And it releases water into the stones, limestones, and they heat up, and they heat
this
up.
This is very big, because you get these heated cans of coffee, or you did, I think they may have stopped them now in this country.
No, I do remember those.
But that was just a normal can. It didn't have this thick outer ring on it.
No. Again, because this can cook, you know, fairly weighty meals. That's the idea. And pull that open.
I'm pulling the lid off.
Yeah, and then we're going to leave it, and then we'll just see what happens.
Right, okay.
Yeah, and then...
I'm going to put that to one side there?
Yeah.
Is that good?
Yeah, and when you pick it up later on, just be careful, because you've got to stir it after 3 or 4 minutes. Don't worry, I will I'll remind you.
Okay.
So that's going away. And by the way, if you want to... it is available in the likes of Harvey Nicks, camping shops, etc., online, hot can. Other things they do, chicken curry, they do tortellini, bolognese, they do beans with balls, which I presume, I know they are, in fact they're meatballs with beans, and then they do a veggie version.
How much is that can of rice pudding going to cost?
That costs £3, yeah, 50. So,
because the thing is, that what's wrong with opening a can of cold rice pudding and eating that when you're camping?
I appreciate that. It would have slightly fallen, my little experiment might have fallen apart on this one. If you were on, say you were a mariner,
yes,
you know, you didn't have access to it, or the sea was rough, or you were walking, although it would keep you pretty fit, a few tins of that in your bag.
Yep.
And recycling is interesting, actually, which you can do. But the idea is that you can basically, you can eat hot food when you can't get access to a stove or anything like that. So
okay.
I just thought, well, let's try it. It's out there.
Let's get on the market. You're going to keep an eye on the timings,
yes,
are you?
I am.
Lovely.
I'm Nige on time, which I'm not very particularly good at. But while we're doing that, also, I wanted you to try, and I've not gone too bon because I brought you different waters. First one is the BBC water from the fountain outside.
Okay.
Which is called Angel, which is a British water. And then...
Do you mean it's got the water in that fountain has got a name?
Yes.
It's just water, isn't it?
Yeah, well, it's called the Angel Company, and it's British certified.
Well, yep. What's that? That's the pudding.
That's
is steam rising.
Yeah.
I hope you've done a health and safety risk assessment.
I normally do. Sarah, our producers, always think about that. So, there you go. We'll keep talking.
You're listening to BBC London 94.9.
Just before the explosion.
Okay.
We've got it. We're having pictures taken now, so this is before and after.
Look, producer Sarah is looking very, very concerned. There's someone with a fire extinguisher stood outside the studio. This could get very, very nasty. All right, Nigel.
So the waters, basically. Yes. So we've got the BBC water.
Yes.
And then we've got one called Wenlock Spring, which is from Shropshire. Wenlock Edge, site of special scientific interest. And why I like this water is because you've got the still and the sparkling version, is that it's really high in calcium and minerals, trace minerals. Okay. Minerals. So I'd be intrigued to see if you notice the difference when you taste them.
Okay.
That's why I wanted you to try it.
So shall I have a go?
Yeah, just try them in any particular... Yeah, in the order that they're facing you, and then you can just try them and just see if you do notice. Well, and...
This is water number one. This is the Angel water,
That's your...
It tastes like good...
Yes, every day.
Good... It tastes like Council Pop.
Yeah.
You know, which is...
Yeah. While you do it now, you've got your spoon there. Could you give your rice pudding a little bit of a stir?
He's very bossy, isn't he?
Well, it's just I know I'm looking at my timings there. Give it a little bit of a stir, it'll open it all up. And
there we go.
Don't leave the spoon in, it could melt.
No.
No. There you go, that's the first bit on the way. And then you'll notice it does warm up.
Right, okay.
And then, which is the Wenlock Spring, which you do see out and about. You also see quite a lot of London based restaurants.
It tastes like...
Do say the same if you think it's the same.
It tastes the same. It tastes like water. It tastes the same.
Well, I think it's a little bit more chalky. I'm a bit unfortunate to let you try the rice pudding.
I've got a slightly milky mouth now that I've had rice pudding.
And then...
Number three.
Yeah, we've got the sparkling version of it.
I'm not a fan of sparkling water.
Oh.
No. I just always think it's a little bit of a con, the sparkling water, because you're paying for air.
Yeah. But well, to me, I don't drink it, and it also repeats on me. It's a reason that I was banned from fizzy drinks when I was a child.
Well, you're a bit windy.
Burping.
Yes.
Yeah, as opposed to and windy at the other end.
I've got a boy who's 3.5, and I like to drink Coca-Cola and Pepsi-Cola, but I don't want him to drink it. So whenever he says, "Dada, what's that?" Oh, it's Daddy's medicine. Daddy's got a headache. It's a medicine. Oh, instantly loses interest in this brown fizzy juice.
Very quickly, he'll see through that one. So
I know he will. But those two waters, I do love a good glass of cold water. I think it's one of the best drinks in the world. But the people that came up with the idea of selling us bottled water, it is genius,
brilliant,
isn't it? I know what, let's put some water in a bottle and sell it to people. When did it become fashionable? About 15 years ago?
And some of it just does taste of profit. And also when you go around the supermarkets and you look at them and you see these, you know, it's a 5-gallon drum for 20 pence or something, you think someone along the line, when you're buying, you know, a fancy bottle with all the stuff, or some places have water menus. Any water that's brought in from Fiji seems to defeat the object for me.
Mm.
You know, fine as it might be, but the fact that it's come from the other side of a world, you know, by ship, or hopefully not flown in, from Fiji, does seem a little bit bonkers when it's all about food miles and everything like that.
Can you taste the difference in those waters?
Yeah, I could. Right. Yeah, definitely. And that's why the Wenlock Spring one is just that chalky different element. And I think because normally I would have Chateau Thames, you know, when I go, and when I'm reviewing a restaurant, it's one of the things is to see what happens when you order it. And I did get a very sniffy response that said from someone, I call it that, because I said he said still or sparkling. I said, I'll just have tap water, jug of that, thanks, you know, ice in the middle. He said so he shouted across this restaurant, a pep talk. He said, a jug of Chateau Thames for the big hitters on table 4.
Because there did used to be a stigma, didn't there, about ordering tap water. Now I do it. Tap water, please.
Yeah.
Because they have to give it to you. They can't say no. But no. I did feel uncomfortable about it. What's this, the fourth drink we've got?
The other one now, it's basically, I put a little bit of a cordial. It's a summer cordial.
Ooh.
It's from. It's spelt Belvoir, but it's pronounced Beaver.
Is it?
And, as in beautiful view, but it's
I've always called it Belvoir.
Yeah, I know. There you go.
Oh,
now you know.
Okay, what flavour
and this is lemon cordial, with real lemons in there, tucked into it all. And they're based in Beaver, They've got Fruit Farms and what have you, funnily enough, and they're in Grantham. But you see that everywhere.
That's good.
Good. I thought you'd like
refreshing,
that.
Refreshing, you see. Very refreshing.
Yeah. Another quick stir, I think.
Another quick stir. Yes, boss. Yes,
now, while we're talking about it, coming up here...
This can is very hot.
Yes. Yeah. And when you move it to taste it in a few minutes, I don't want you to touch the top too much, because you could get burnt.
This is dangerous.
We've got the Great British Beer Festival coming up.
Right.
36th festival. It's 55,000 people are expecting. Starts on Tuesday the 13th of August.
Yep.
Run 5 p.m. That's for the evening session.
Yes. I've never been to a beer festival. As you know, I'm not a drinker.
Yes.
It's just people drinking beer, is it?
And Perry's, which are made from Perry pears and ciders.
Right.
And there's live music. It's a huge... And Mrs. Earl's Court. Last year, it was at Olympia, which I love, that lovely, great old Victorian building, because of the Olympic Games.
Yep.
So they've taken and commandeered Earl's Court. So it's going back there for this one. But yeah, it's just... there are 800 different drinks to be had. A lot of them on cask, barreled. Some of them in bottled beers from all over the world. It'd be interesting, actually... whether you even bother, or whether you've ever come across a good low-alcohol or zero-alcohol beer, or you just think, what's the point?
I kind of think, what's the point? If you're not going to get drunk, then there's no point in drinking... I did try a couple of years ago, a friend of mine brought me a no-alcohol beer. And I just thought, this is too odd. It seems I'm drinking something that feels and tastes and smells like beer, but it is having no effect on me.
Yeah.
So, no, it doesn't quite kind of work for me. Really.
Yeah, and I have to say, it's a bit like, tofu used as a meat substitute. I like tofu, but I use it as tofu. I don't necessarily need it to convince me that it's mince or something like that.
This sounds good. The Taco Wars.
Oh, yes.
And Truck Stop.
Yeah, they're
what
good.
Is this?
They are these like pop up events. You've seen that far more now. You've seen pop up restaurants all over
the place.
Very
fashionable at the moment.
Yeah, and Thursday, but it's last night and today, Friday, just in case you were sure we pre recorded, which we're not. It's at Woodworth E14. And lots of those mobile culinary trucks that you see now all over the place. You know, they could be Argentinian, it could be tacos, as in Mexican.
Yeah.
And they are, and again, with live music wherever. And I think the quality of these mobile kitchens is really quite stunning. And for a lot of chefs, it's because they don't want to be hidebound by one particular kitchen. They want to go on the road. And I like that. So it's got more of a free spirit element.
Are you a cook yourself?
Yeah.
You're tasty in the kitchen. You can do stuff.
I like to do that.
Are you one of those ones that can just, which my wife is, who can just open a cupboard and go, right, we've got this, this and this. Right, let's do it. And you can just put anything together from anything.
If I have to do that, that's very much done with Nigel Slater. Element. My missus, who's half Sicilian, she's probably a more I recipes I follow, certainly in the early days, and then you make them your own.
Yeah.
But she's absolutely instinctive. She'd understand completely what things would go together. Well, I'd have to think about it.
Did
a bit
you
more.
Say she's Italian?
Yes.
Yeah, my wife's half Greek. But I think it's possibly a continental thing where they can make things work. Whereas, you know, perhaps British people might look at it and go, nah, I can't do nothing with that. Indeed, beans on toast.
Yes.
But I think the continentals can really work magic.
And also, the idea is that if you... And we are getting it back in London now a bit more, where you can go into and shop on a more regular basis, rather than doing a weekly or, heaven forbid, a fortnightly shop, and buy everything, where you can go into places to support your local greengrocers, fishmongers and what have you. And I love going into a fishmonger and just saying, what have you got today? It's like an Italian or Greek restaurant where today I propose. That's one of the real classic terminology in Italy, meaning that you should have this because it's good, it's fresh, it's been landed this morning. And I think that's a really good idea. And similarly, eating seasonal vegetables, it's what it's all about at the moment, and I think that's definitely something. And again, in London, you know, our food culture, we've got it back, we're bringing it back, we're definitely getting it back. That and the brewing culture is great, because a lot of it nearly died out, and I think it's very important.
It does seem to be making a comeback, and you're right, part of the thing that's been helping are these pop-up markets and pop-up festivals and pop-up restaurants, and that I seem to remember that starting maybe about 5 or 6 years ago, and it's becoming really popular now, isn't it?
Definitely. And if you've got empty buildings, you know, it's great, but you should put something in there, be it a cafe, deli, restaurant, one of you. It's a bit like houses. If they're empty for a long term, it'd be nice if people lived in them.
Yeah.
You know, I've always thought that. Street Feast is moved up the road from Haggerston Merchant Yard to a container park in Dalston.
Yep.
And works really well. It's got a groovy space. And by the way, talk about monkeys. I saw them at the Royal Albert Hall just before what, he moved on, he went to Davy Jones's locker in
I was there that night.
Oh, right.
I was there as well, yes. It was good, weren't they? It was a good
fantastic.
Concert.
Fantastic. And musicians, you know, piece of talk, all they're playing all their own instruments and what have you.
Bit of French horn, bit of guitar.
Brilliant.
Yes.
And obviously Mickey Nesbitt. Dolenz. But Mike Nesbitt was a brilliant musician as well. Not with them, but Dolenz was fantastic.
And what a voice. He's 69 years old. What a voice he's got still.
And survived and gone through it. And, you know, he could party.
Yeah.
He got his Keith Moon colours, but he's survived and he's still
Keith
there.
Keith Moon and Harry Nilsson in the 70s. Oh, those naughty boys.
But he's still around, you know, and fantastic.
Good for him.
But do you remember when Davy Jones came onto the stage and said, "Hello, I'm Davy Jones' dad"?
Yeah, Davy will be out in a minute.
Yeah.
Oh, bless him. Yeah. Oh, I miss him.
Yeah. I know.
Said his sausage.
But at least he went in a, you know, it was quick.
Yes.
So back to the street feast. Haggerston Merchant Yard now in Dalston. It costs you an out. And again, there's a huge amount going on. If you want to know more about these, go onto either Truck Stop or if you put in Street Feast, you'll get the links to it. It's open from 5 p.m. today to midnight, and then from tomorrow it's noon to midnight, and then it'll be there for the next 7 weeks as well. So that's a boatload of that going on. And just going back to the beer fest, as I say, if you want to Google it, it'll tell you all the different elements are going to be there. Multiple Sclerosis is the charity they're raising money for, and we do tend to raise a lot of money for that number of people. And there are a lot of the pub games, which you can do, the traditional ones. Shut the Box or Spare Alley. No idea, but they just make me laugh. As do lots of those real ale names. But some of the bars that are there, London Element, Fuller's, still brewing in London, hurrah. Harvey's in Sussex, they're going to be there. Shepherd and Neame from Faversham in Kent. And Hogsback, which is a more recent brewery, established in 1992. That's in Tongham in Surrey. And then one of their beers is Tea, traditional English ale, 4.2%. And A over Tea, Aroma over Tongham.
There you go, you see. Well done.
You see, that's a barley wine, 9%. I love that. And I was just looking through the camera beer guide, which is, but it's all about those names. Bee's Knees from Bartram's, Black Sabbath from a Brunswick brewery. You know, they are. It's just,
if I were to go back to drinking, and boy, would that be a mess. But Black Sabbath is what I would go for, I think.
Slaughterhouse Porter from Great Heck.
Brilliant.
You know, all these stuff. But Slaker Pale Ale, because it slakes your thirst. Skull Splitter from Orkney. There you go. It tells you exactly what it says on the bottle. But that's going to be taking place, as I say, from the 13th to the 17th. And then music with food. That's one of the great innovations. Yep. Is that a lot of pubs have changed. They're doing food now. It's a really big element, and so it should be the much more family friendly. A lot of them are much more women welcome.
hey, really? Wow! Good for you, sisters. Yes.
Yeah, well done. Look, just changed, but. Some of Gordon Ramsay's places, York and Albany, which is going up towards the zoo, up there in Regent's Park, Primrose Hill Way. They've got Play On last Tuesday of the month, and they're doing pizzas, two pizzas, £15. Gordon trying to make a bit of a buck, quite right, on the bar and music nights. The Rock the Boat of a Narrow, which is just on the banks of the Thames in E something, 14 or something. Anyway, it's well down there going towards the Olympic Stadium, and they every Wednesday they've got live music, and they're doing a house bottle of wine and sharing platter for £25. Good veggie options there as well, and finally the one in the city, which is BSK, which stands for
I could make something up, but it probably wouldn't be allowed to be said on the radio.
We'll find out. BSK is. Well, maybe Sarah could find out just while I remember whatever it is. But they've got Lazy Loaf, and that's a brunch menu with a Bloody Mary buffet or a Virgin Mary buffet. And that's, again, they've got live music on there. So if you go onto...
Nigel, we've got 2 minutes. 2 minutes left.
Oh, yes.
Yes, shall I... Is this rice pudding ready?
Yes, go and have a go at it.
Let's have a little look. Okay, I'm going to pick it up very carefully. The can's quite
Bread
warm.
Street Kitchen. There you go.
Bread Street Kitchen. Well done. Okay. Yeah. So this has been heating for about, 10 minutes now?
Yes, yes.
Yeah, it's nice. It's warm rice pudding.
There you go.
It's not too hot.
It's what it says on the tin. If you give it another stir.
Little stir. It's nice. Well, there comes a stir. What I like, my favourite treat, and I got told off for being greedy and doubling up, is a tin of rice pudding and a tin of custard. Oh. Mix it together. Beautiful. Isn't it? That's what it's all about.
That's the taste of childhood, if ever. So are we going to have a record before we go to the music, or are we before we go to the news, or are we going to Billy straight? So I just got my timing.
We're going to a record at 55.
55.
Okay, so well, as long as I know that.
55 is your answer. Carry on, I'm eating.
You have the hot can,
yep.
Warmish rice pudding.
I love a rice pudding.
I can tell you also, but,
love it.
If you like sangria, or if you like porron, which is a Spanish drinking jug, which your friends can pour from straight into your mouth.
Oh, it's getting hot
there
now.
You go.
Yep.
Yeah, should do.
No,
also, specialty gin and tonics, because the Spanish love G&Ts.
Yep.
Then Iberica, which is one that we know of, again, Great Portland Street, just near us here. But they've got one, they've got La Terrazza, I'll give you a bit of a clue in the name, but it is a terrace. And that's on at their place in Canary Wharf. And that's at Cabot Square. And that's some really great, we've got fantastic chefs doing their stuff. But they've got not only got great Spanish food and tapas, but they've got now they're embracing Spanish drinks, alcoholic and non-alcoholic, yep, as well. So just to also give us a couple of your favourite vegetarian diners.
I am a vegetarian, and that means I don't eat fish, dear listener.
Yes.
For me, the best place, and this is a wonderful restaurant, I'm loathe to kind of say it, 'cause I don't want people going there, Lexington Street, Mildred's.
Oh,
they do, and every time I go there, I have very healthy intentions. I just end up having their burger of the day, because it's this big, fat burger, these massive chips. The food there is just wonderful. Tiny little place, great service, great food, they know what they're doing, yeah, always an interesting, varied menu. Love it. It's the best for me.
And been on the culinary and veggie map for a long time. Really good. The one that I liked, again, as a carnivore, you just never miss any meat because why would you? It's so flavoursome. But also, the textures are fantastic. They've got one now, St. John Street, in up there in Islington, where EC1. But that's the gate.
And
the original,
yes,
one was near, it still is, it's under the flyover at Hammersmith, near the...
yep.
Near the River Cafe, going towards the Riverside Studios there. And fantastic. I think it's an old convent, but really glorious. And if you go in, the two brilliant brothers who run it, that's Queen Caroline Street. Do go and check it out. The other one, Food for Thought, which has been around, yep, for a long time.
Love it.
On Neil Street. And the Wild Food Cafe at Neil's Yard in Covent Garden. Again,
Nigel, we have
it
to end it there. It's a pleasure to meet you. Thank you so much. I'm going to finish my rice pudding. You shoot off and enjoy your weekend.
And you.
BBC London 94.9.
London's news. London's stories.
Blimey! I'm eating what can only be described as a nuclear hot rice pudding. Nigel Barden tricked me there. That rice pudding was quite cool to start with. The bottom is very, very hot indeed. Luckily, he's left lots of water here, so I can cool myself down. It's the last hour of me sitting in for Robert Elms this week on BBC London 94.9. But I'm not getting off easy. We've got a busy hour. We've got James Tormé coming in. I'm very excited. He's Mel Tormé's son. He's going to be coming in and singing live. And then it's Funky Friday. I've been helped out with Funky Friday. I am not a very funky man. If you were to see me and describe me, funky would not be one of the words you would use. We do have some good music lined up for you, so that's something. Very quickly, earlier on in the show, I threw out what the deaths of which celebrities cause you to cry. I should probably read some of these. Let me read a couple, and we'll do a bit more a bit later on. Lots of you saying Freddie Mercury. Nicola Fox! When Freddie Mercury died, I was inconsolable. First year of secondary school, I overheard it on the way to class. I couldn't stop crying. I got sent home. That evening, I built a shrine out of cardboard with a letter to Freddie. My mum found it, well embarrassed. What did you write in your letter to dead Freddie Mercury? John Lennon has been mentioned a few times. Michael says, I cried when John Lennon was killed in the early 80s. I was an 18-year-old student and missed college on the day it was reported because I was so sad. It's as if a friend died. He was a superstar in every way. Oh, look, Ronnie Golden's emailed in. Yes, the legendary Ronnie Golden. He's also said John Lennon, possibly because he was the first hero of a generation to actually be killed. I cried many a salty tear, even. Imagine crying a peer. Oh, that would be sore. I cried many a salty tear upon news of John Lennon's ugly passing and consigned myself to bed for the rest of the day. Loads on Twitter as well. We'll get to those in a bit. Email ian.lee@bbc.co.uk. the passing of various celebrities. It turns out we're all a little bit softer than I thought we were. Who made you cry when they died? You can text as well, 81333. Start your text, London. James Tormey coming in very shortly. Afternoon. This is Ian Lee, BBC London 94.9. I'm sitting in for Robert Elms. He's back next week, so don't panic, for goodness sake. I'm joined now by James Tormey. Hello, James.
Ian, how are you?
Am I getting the emphasis right, the Tormey?
Well, over here, I tend to get a lot of Tormey
Tormey.
America, it's a lot of Tormey.
So which would you prefer? I'll call you everyone,
I'm
boss.
I'm very laid back about it. I have to say, it's not something that I spend a lot of time worrying about, Ian.
you don't spend lonely nights in hotel rooms going, my God, he called me Tormey.
Well, actually, I do, but I didn't want to come right out and say that.
Well, we can work to that. Listen, just don't touch any more of the equipment. You've already vandalized several bits of equipment in this studio.
But I like to be vandalizing within the first 11 seconds of being in the studio. Sort of a tradition for me.
It may be acceptable in America. In the United Kingdom, the BBC, we have standards, sir, believe it or not. Hey, listen, it's very, very nice to meet you. We're going to be playing a track from your album, Love for Sale. I have to mention this, simply because I was a big fan of your dad's. You're Mel Tormey's son, of course.
Right.
Does a little bit of you die inside every time? Because that must get mentioned every time you do an interview, and I'm sorry for bringing it up.
I'm one of those people that absolutely the opposite. I don't shy away from the legacy at all. I'm incredibly proud.
Mm.
You know, almost to a fault of both of my parents and of course my grandmother Thora Hurd, who was sort of an institution over here
the huge star. I only found that out recently that Thora Hurd is your grandmother.
Yeah, I've got some interesting genes to work with.
if you haven't got any talent, having those two in your family,
I have no excuse.
Then
right?
Shame on you, for goodness sakes! And also, obviously your dad was a huge star, but you've met people like you met Bing Crosby.
Oh yes, I did. I mean, I spent time up at the Crosby estate, the compound up there near San Francisco, when I was a little kid. And one of the main memories from that was all of the knives and forks. There were about four or five of each when we sat down to. But actually, Bing was a very laid-back, cool guy. And I'm friends with his grandson, Phil Crosby Jr. as well, right. Who's a really nice guy.
It's so cool. You can just say, oh, yeah, Bing was a really cool guy.
I mean, I was very, very little, I have to tell you. You know, like, it's a lot clearer memory for my older sister, Daisy.
Right.
Who was sort of a bit more conscious at that time. But
do you look back at your childhood and your life and think, oh, my God, how did I met all these legends, you know, legends.
Well, you start realizing that stuff when you get a little older.
Yeah.
You know, at the time, it's just a bunch of people absolutely, and there were a lot of other people, you know, like that. That later I was like, wow, that was Gene Hackman, who used to always come over, you know, or Ricardo Montalban or Betty White. There were people. They were Aunt Betty, you know, and et cetera. So, yeah, you kind of begin to treasure that as you get a little older and realize what was happening.
You're here. You're doing a gig. Is it tomorrow? You're doing the gig?
Yeah,
the Hippodrome.
Yes, I'm sort of picking up a tradition that where my father left off. Mm. Almost exactly to the day 37 years ago in 1976.
Yeah.
And it's a great thrill. It's sort of the first show of my Tormey Meets the British series, where I'm sort of incorporating, which I don't normally do or get to do, the story of my parents and how they met here in London in 1965.
The show has a narrative then.
You know, so it's nice. They sort of gelled together. It's all about the Tormey love affair with all things British, you know, and of course, how my parents met at the Cool Elephant, which was a killer club that was around for about 12 minutes.
I've missed the Cool Elephant.
Well,
yes,
it was very cool club in Mayfair, and that's where they met in 65. And it's a very interesting story because they actually decided to get married at the end of the night. So,
I say.
You know, only in the movies, sometimes in real life.
Yeah, and the 60s. The 60s were a little bit...
The 60s were a little bit kind of nutty, weren't they? Yeah.
Listen, my dad just passed this year, and it's very sad. I miss him terribly.
No.
It must be odd having so many literal records and video records and all this of your dad's life.
And my mother and my grandmother.
Yeah.
So it's a very unusual thing. and I consider myself and, you know, one day my kids and grandchildren, hopefully, to be very fortunate to be able to have such an archive of things. And,
it must
and
be amazing. I missed Dad today.
Most people don't have that. Yeah. No, I'm so sorry, man.
No, no, but listen, I bless you. I appreciate
God bless
that.
Him.
But no, definitely. But I'm just thinking it must be such a comfort to go, oh, I'm going to put one of Dad's records. Oh, I'm going to put one of his Christmas specials today.
It's a double-edged sword, right. Ian. You know what I mean? There's times when it's just a little overwhelming, especially sure. considering what I do yeah. for a living.
what kind of there's going to be a narrative. What kind of songs can people expect when they come and see your show?
Well, I'm doing, we're going to do a song in a moment yep. called From This Moment On, which really is sort of sums up the way my dad felt when he first came over. But, I mean, it all starts with my dad's number one hit that he had when he came over for the first time to England in about 1956, the summer of 56. Number one hit, and it was called Mountain Greenery. It has songs, a couple songs from my album, Love for Sale, including the title track. What else are we doing? Better Day Will Come. I know you were just talking about John Lennon. I won the John Lennon Award for that song.
Fantastic.
Better Day Will Come. And all kinds of Ray Charles songs that I did with the BBC last year.
Lovely.
And the concert orchestra when we did The Life of Ray Charles at the Cheltenham Jazz Festival. I'll be incorporating. I have this strange way that I associate Ray Charles with England because that's when I really learned about all the Ray Charles songs was with the BBC there.
Yeah.
On Friday night is music night.
Yeah, of course. So. Should we play the album is Love for Sale. You're going to do a song for us live in a second. But before that, shall we have Coming Home Baby from the album?
Cool.
Let's have a look. I think I've got it set up properly. Let's see what happens if I do this. That's easy for you to say, huh?
Coming home.
Parlor tricks.
That's fantastic. James Tormey, that's Coming Home Baby. That's from the album Love for Sale. This kind of this kind of sound, this sort of big band, jazzy sound, it's very much in vogue at the moment, hasn't it? It's made a comeback again, as it always does.
Well, yeah, no small part thanks to people like Jamie Cullum and Michael Bublé and yep. Norah Jones and others who have helped popularize it. Yeah, I'm very grateful for them because without them, there'd probably be no me.
We're all grateful for Michael Bublé. Even people, no one can hate Bublé. No one can hate him. Well, maybe. No, they can't. Listen, we're joined by your pianist, Ross Stanley. You're going to play a song for us now.
Ross Stanley, the great Ross Stanley. Mr. 12 gigs a week, and I somehow got him to come in here.
And he squeezed it. He squeezed us in this afternoon, Ross. Thank you so much. What are you going to play for
this
us?
This is a nice little song called From This Moment On.
Away you go, sir. Fantastic. Well done. Well done, gentlemen. I don't like people who can sing. It makes me really jealous because I discovered, I made the realization a few years ago, I can't sing. And so, but you know, there's everyone likes to think they can sing a bit. And there was a point I heard myself back and thought, I have to end this.
In the shower. Everybody sounds good in the shower.
Even I don't sound good in the shower. That sounds fantastic. Were you always going to sing this kind of music?
No.
You ever thought you were going to rebel and do punk or
metal? No, I did rebel.
Really?
Absolutely. Because, of course, I didn't want to ride, you know, my father's reputation into any kind of parade, so to speak. So initially, I sang R&B. I was an R&B soul artist. And there's still a lot of that in what I do.
Yeah.
You know, it comes out much more modern influences than, for instance, my father and some of the other singers I love from his era would have put into their songs. But what happened was I would sing an encore, an a cappella encore of the Dizzy Gillespie arrangement of the Thelonious Monk song, the Carmen McRae version with the Lambert, Hendrix, and Roth lyrics. Have I confused you?
Yeah, I'm following you, Jonas.
I would do that at the end of those R&B shows when I first started at the Viper Room in L.A. I had this residency that was wonderfully successful, but and you could hear a pin drop when I would sing Round Midnight, which is the song I was describing.
See, that would have been an easy way of saying it. Thank you very much.
Yeah, I used to sing Round Midnight, and people liked it. So really, it was just irresistible when I realized I could leave the legacy of quite uniquely the music I'd grown up with to my own generation and to future generations, and hopefully make the people that were already fans of my dad happy too.
Well, listen, I think it sounds fantastic. The album is Love for Sale. You're playing at the Hippodrome tomorrow night?
Yep, 8 o'clock.
Is there a website, James, if people want to come and find out more about you? Where should they
go? Absolutely, jamestorme.com. Oh, you can go right there.
You got the James Dormain.
I actually managed to secure that. Yeah,
because it's so often you can't these days. You get these little swatches.
I know, and then they make you buy it from them.
I know. Listen, have a great gig tomorrow. Thank you so much for coming
in.
Very
much,
nice to meet you,
man.
Ross. Very nice to meet you as well. Thank you
for
that. Let's go from one fantastic vocal to another, shall we? One of the greatest pop songs of all time, "God Only Knows" by the Beach Boys. Lots of tweets about celebrities you cried over when they died. Leslie says Jade Goody, which is an unusual one. To see her life play out in a few short years and leave her boys is yes. Mark Pearson, you cried over John Candy. Well, good for you. Couldn't watch any of his films for about 5 years after he died. Lots of you saying Freddie Mercury. Lots of you saying Freddie Mercury. Dawn Webster, now here's an interesting one, Dawn, and I can totally understand this, but some of you may laugh when I say this name, but actually I can sort of understand it. Richard Whiteley, Countdown. Yeah, I could understand how you do that. I met him once. What a delightful kind of old bumbling fool he was. You know, in the nicest possible, slightly British eccentric kind of way. Very, very nice. Another one for Joe Strummer. That's from Simon. And someone's saying Karen Keating as well. You can keep tweeting those in. I'm here for another 30 minutes at Ian Lee, or you can send me an email, ian.lee@bbc.co.uk. Coming up, the last 30 minutes. Well, this has been the bit of the week. Everyone has said, the last 30 minutes on Friday, you can put your feet up, relax, take it easy. This is the bit I've been the most anxious and nervous about. Funky Friday from someone who is not very funky in the slightest. We've got some cracking music lined up. Don't get me wrong. Not been chosen by me. It's been chosen by many, many people here at BBC London 94.9. So we've got some cracking stuff coming up. I'll do my best to steer us through it, but I might need you to hold my hand ever so slightly. This is Ian Lee, BBC London 94.9. We're coming up now to... Oh, look at the time. 30 minutes left. It's 2:30 or thereabouts. Well, here we go. The last 27 minutes of me filling in for Robert. He's back next week. If you've enjoyed this week, I believe that I will be the Robert Elms Best Of podcast that will be released at some point later on this afternoon. Go to the BBC website or have a little look on iTunes and you'll be able to download the podcast and hear some of the stuff we've been talking about this week. Right, Funky Friday, the last 30 minutes of the show is me playing some funky songs. Should we get straight in there? Yes, why not? Jackson 5, Stand... Is it the Jackson 5 or just Jackson 5? Is it the Jackson 5? Jackson 5. I don't know. It makes very, very little difference. Some bands are very funny about that. You know the Eagles? They're not the Eagles. They're Eagles. Yeah, some people get very, very upset if you get it wrong, so I want to make sure I don't. Jackson 5, Stand. Next up, Chic Le Freak. Now, I knew very little about Chic or Nile Rodgers until about 2 months ago when I read the excellent Nile Rodgers autobiography. If you're looking, I do love a good rock or pop biography. If you're looking for a cracking book to read that is full of tales of drugs, of money, of near death, of redemption, of working with virtually every star in the world, then go and get the Nile Rodgers book. What's odd, though, is, I mean, he's worked with Madonna and he's worked with everybody. He spends a disproportionate amount of time in the book telling us how he worked with the Thompson Twins. The Thompson Twins. Nile Rodgers once jammed with Jimi Hendrix. I know, isn't that odd? Honestly, his book is a cracking read. I do love a good rock biography. And it was handed to me, bizarrely, by Matt Allwright, he of the Rogue Traders and indeed the Watchdog. He said, Ian, read this book, you'll love it. And I thought, oh, really? Do you think so? It's a cracking read. Nile Rodgers, definitely worth it. Right, should we have a little bit of Prince? Or not, as the case may be. Hang on, here we go. No, it's not having any of that. Let's try this one. That's better. Prince has bailed out of me. Naughty Prince. Naughty Prince! Chaka Khan would never do a thing like that. Naughty Prince. Naughty. Not playing when he's meant to. When Prince did those concerts at the O2 Arena... Not a massive, huge Prince fan, but my wife wanted to go, so I bought... tickets, quite expensive tickets. I know they're all one price, but I got them from a gentleman, shall we say. We were in the fourth row, and it was a fantastic concert. And on the night we went, he did a lot of the hits. I know he didn't always do the hits on those shows, but he did do a lot of the hits. But he was singing... what song was he singing? He was singing something... Anyway, singing one of the hits, and we're in the fourth row. And while he's singing, I went, Oi, Prince! And he looked at me and he gave me such a dirty look. Real dirty look. Oi, Prince! He gave me a filthy, filthy look. He was, I don't know what he was, what did he expect people to do? You're four rows away from Prince. It's weird being that close to someone that famous, isn't it? Normally you go to these big concerts, you're sat in the back. But to be that close, you have to go, "Hi, Prince!" He was not happy in the slightest. Not happy in the, maybe that's why he won't play for me now. Let's have Rose Royce. Fingers crossed. Well, we're coming to the end of my stint here at BBC London 94.9. I've thoroughly enjoyed myself. Thoroughly enjoyed it. And you've been very patient and very kind, taking part and phoning and texting and emailing, getting in touch, and it's been delightful. Thank you. Hello to Lynn in Forest Gate, who apparently called up. Hello, my dear. There's a name from the past. Wow. Right, let's have one more song before I go home, shall I? And don't forget, Robert will be back next week. Let's end with Jocelyn Brown. Well, that's it. Thank you very much. Oh, no, please, spare the tears. Spare the tears. Robert's back next week. There'll be a podcast of this week. Do go and have a little look on the BBC website or go to iTunes. Look under Robert Elms. I've had a thoroughly enjoyable time this week. Lots of nice guests. Spoke to lots of nice callers. Hope to be back at some point. I'm off home to watch three episodes of Big Brother back to back. Don't ask. Don't ask. It's a contractual obligation. Right, that's it. I'll see you again soon. Robert will be back on Monday.